From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. Little overcast outside. Starting to feel a little more like fall day to day. Still a little too hot for Neil's taste, but it's getting
hot.
There a little bit.
It's not feeling. I mean,
2 days ago it rained a little and it got so humid for a couple hours after that that it was.
I walked to Gus yesterday and it was a sauna. This is hot. I'm done.
Why are you done?
I'm just ready for cool weather.
You're ready for cool weather in June.
I would prefer it. I'll never be the guy that complains about the cold.
No. We'll talk about some different things today. Matt Luke, Weston McGriff, Phil Longo spoke to the media yesterday. You can find that content up at rebelgrove.com. Also, it was basketball media day yesterday. So Matt Enzel, Andy Kennedy comments at rebelgrove.com as well. I think Neil even taped the Olympic sports interviews yesterday with Stephen McRoberts and Matt Mott. So
there's a lot of video up on the message board.
Full scope of content yesterday.
And I'll have a basketball story sometime in the next day, maybe today, maybe tomorrow. There was just no point in doing it yesterday. And honestly, I was preoccupied from 3:08 until about 6:30.
Yeah, you got in the sauce early yesterday, so we'll hit
game. I needed some sauce.
We'll hit all these topics quickly. We've been telling you always about the ribs at the Oxford Exxon. Tell you that with three home games in a row, time to use them for a little catering as well for the game day. They got four specials for you to go by and pick up. They've got the kickoff, which is 2 pounds of pork, 12 buns, and three sides. That's quart sides, by the way. 1 pound of pulled pork and 6 buns if you got fewer people, 2 slabs of ribs and 2 sides, and number 4, 3 slabs of ribs. So you get any of those options there at the Oxford Exxon to help cater your tailgate in the Grove. What?
Can they deliver to press box?
I would assume we probably can make that happen. Now you'd have to finagle it in a bag and put it under something and trick some security guards, but you probably could pull that off. I think so. I mean, if I can get Subway sandwiches into the baseball stadium, we probably could get ribs into the football stadium.
Announcing that we're planning to do it might not be the greatest idea in the world, but
I don't think whoever runs the security office is probably listening, so we're okay.
Or at least, why not?
I don't mean the security, like the people at the gate, just to hunt.
Why wouldn't they want to listen to the Oxford Exxon podcast?
They might. I don't know.
Also, we have huge numbers.
We do. Also, see on Twitter this morning that the Oxford Exxon is going to give away free gas for a year to one lucky follower on Twitter. So if you follow the Oxford Exxon, when they get to 4,000 followers, free gas for a year for one person.
That's pretty valuable.
That's actually that's something right there now.
That's real. I mean, not to say that the ribs aren't, but that's
substantial.
That's significant.
Yeah. So do all those things with the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. You're going to need a car to get free gas.
You will. You will need a vehicle. So
I guess you could just put it in your lawnmower every week. It'd be a lot of gas for your lawnmower.
Yeah, that would be really a waste of a prize. Yeah. You know, my boat scholarship analogy.
Uh-huh.
If you win a free gas for a year and you don't have a vehicle, it doesn't mean much. So what you should do, if that happens to you, go to Clark Ford and buy a vehicle. 694. You know what I was about to do? Never mind. Oh, my God. I've lost my mind. It's Clark Ford in Amory. You call Corey Clark. You tell Corey. It's 662-257-1900. You tell Corey Clark what new Ford you're looking for. Corey will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. It's just a great deal from Clark Ford in Amory. Once you get your call, once you get your bid, I mean your quote, you can shop it around. Call all the other dealers if it makes you happy, or just take our word for it. And not only take our word for it, take the word of so many other podcast listeners who have let Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's so simple. You get a great vehicle, a great service after the sale, everything you might want. A great deal, and make it even better. Tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Any of the above, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory.
Saw this morning that it's 21 years last night since the Jeffrey Mayer pulling the ball into the stands at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah, against Baltimore.
Yeah, Tony Tarasco in right field. David Johnson losing his mind. I watched the video this morning. The pitcher even coming out to argue with the right field umpire. Derek Jeter at the plate.
Yeah, well, the ball probably would have been caught.
Oh, there's no doubt, because it was descending straight down. It was not going on a line into the stands. The kid didn't even catch the ball. He just knocks it into the stands. Then there's like a scrum right there over the wall for the ball. But then after that, he's basically made a hero. He was like riding people's shoulders and stuff while all the Orioles were raising hell.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny.
I remember that game. Absolutely.
I was 12. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that game very well.
Yankees end up winning because they end up beating the Braves 4-2 in the World Series.
See, it ended up having an impact on
it had an impact
your
on
life.
Me.
It did, yeah, it had a ripple effect.
I would have felt better if I was facing the Orioles at that
Drop
moment.
A pebble into the water.
Butterfly flaps its wings.
There you go.
Was that the year Brady Anderson hit 50 home runs or whatever because he was all roided up, or was that the next year?
Seems like that was the year.
Because, I mean, they made the ALCS. Somebody had been scoring.
Yeah.
Dude had like 32 career home runs and he hits 50.
It's 51.
Is that 51?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, it was very
truly unbelievable.
There might have been a little little help there for Mr. Anderson.
You know, I've always been the minority guy on this. I don't blame them.
Because they can get away with it.
And because if you hit home runs, it's debatable whether chicks dig the long ball. Owners digged the long ball.
From a money standpoint.
Brady Anderson got a huge contract out of that year.
My favorite power surge guy during all that, for some reason, was Jeff Kent. Played middle infield and just hit home run after home run.
He won an MVP.
Just home run after home run after home run as a middle infielder.
Yeah, I love some of the media that rips the guys. And it's like, you covered them every day. What did you think when a guy in his early 30s changed his body to that degree?
No, it's just the cream and the clear and the
oh, he's just working
all out. Natural.
Just working out hard.
Bonds is the most frustrating one for me because he's a Hall of Famer without it.
Yes.
40-40 guy year after year after year without it.
Well, this is where I come back to. It's the underappreciated greatness of Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
He, from all accounts, did not use them. What would have happened if he had? He might have hit 900 home runs.
Well, it's not why it's the minority thing, whatever, and it's not blaming them per se. I do have a hard time watching Bonds and some of those guys from that era now looking back when they've got the body armor all over them. I mean, you're basically a big action figure up there where you're either intentionally walked, or you hit the ball 485 feet.
Yeah.
It's hard to look back on that, and it doesn't age well at all.
I remember it being frustrating watching it, and I cheered for a team that had one of those guys.
You did.
And I thought, eh.
You didn't believe the charade.
No.
Even in 98 when it
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
70 and 66.
Yeah. Sosa hit 66 home runs.
Yeah.
And he hit some balls. Like, I watch a lot of Cubs games. And I've seen some really good hitters, both wearing Cubs uniforms and other uniforms, hit balls at Wrigley Field. I watched Nolan Arenado take BP at Wrigley Field on a night with the wind blowing out. And he didn't hit balls as far as Sosa hit balls in games. It's just odd. I remember thinking, this is stupid. McGuire was a skinny guy, and all of a sudden, he's this big, hulking mass of a man. And Sosa, when he came up, he came to the Cubs in like 91.
He was drafted by the White Sox?
Yeah, he came over in the George Bell trade.
Okay.
And was the Cubs' leadoff hitter. And if I recall correctly, in his first at-bat with the Cubs, hit a ball down the right field line and raced around the bases for a triple. Speed was a big part of his game. A really athletic guy. And all of a sudden, he's this bulky, massive, big, you know, had a big legs and big butt and all that stuff. When he first came up, he was skinny. Really run. I mean, he was a contact guy. I mean, he would drive the baseball. He was going to be a guy that was going to hit 15 to 20 home runs a year, was going to steal 30 bases a year. I mean, he was going to be a really good baseball player. But come on. But he cashed him. He made a lot of money off hitting a lot of home runs.
Is he around anymore?
He's just now getting to the place where I think maybe he and the Cubs will have some sort of reconciliation. But that hasn't happened to date.
When I was Googling to find the video of the Mayer kid to watch before this morning, I saw a lot of stories 10 years, 20 years after and stuff, and he appears to be living a perfectly normal life. He does not appear to be having the Steve Bartman issues of some others.
Yeah. Bartman as a sympathetic figure is really hard to buy anymore. You find out just how long the Cubs reached out to him.
Trying.
Desperately trying.
And they've won now.
And they've won, and they gave him a ring, and they've gone to his place and they gave or brought him to Wrigley on a day when the team was out of town and presented him with a ring, and you know, he wants his privacy, and that's fine. But when people write the "oh, poor Steve Bartman," a lot of that could have been avoided.
Wasn't his fault.
It wasn't his fault.
It was the shortstop's fault.
Well, it was the shortstop's fault, and to bring things into current vernacular, it was a poorly managed game. It's like yesterday. Thanks, Dust.
But if you could change one play, you would change the shortstop. The play at short.
Yeah, you would change the one play at short. But if you could change if you could change a number of things after that pitch,
yeah,
you might would have sent the pitching coach out, gotten somebody up in the pen, reminded Mark Pryor, hey, it was a foul ball. Chill. We're still up three runs. There's a man on second with one out. We're okay. Relax.
Well, I mean, the Ole Miss version of that is I've talked to some different people. I mean, I was interviewed for that documentary and everything on the Ole Miss 09 series. The one thing other than that button error that sticks out is Mike not going out to talk to David Goforth after the walk or after the error.
Right.
Freshman freaked out there and kind of left him on an island, and then he exploded. Thought, you know, Mike goes out and calms him down, might be okay.
There. Hey, we're okay. It's just a base runner.
Yeah. It's one out, guy on first. All good.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
Let's get a double play ground ball and get out of this.
Yeah.
It's easy to second guess.
Of course.
I thought yesterday Baker managed a bad game. I did. I thought he did the right thing taking Scherzer out when he did, because Scherzer was starting to hang pitches. He's starting to hang that breaking ball. He was at 98 when they took him out, 98 pitches. And, you know, so he goes and he brings in a right-hander, brings in a left-hander, Solis, to face Schwarber. And, of course, the Cubs go with Almora, who has destroyed left-handed pitching all year. He laces a single into left center, scores the tying run. They get out of it. Hayward makes a base-running mistake on a really good play by Michael Taylor in center field. And then in the eighth, I guess, Stella drew the walk. They bunted with Jay. Leonis Martin pinch ran. They bunted with Jay. Brought the right-hander in to pitch to Bryant. Struck him out. And then they go get the left-hander. See, I would have walked Rizzo intentionally and stayed with that right-hander and pitched to Contreras. They go bring the left-hander in to pitch to Rizzo, and I realize that he threw a good pitch and that Rizzo kind of got lucky with the bloop, but why are you pitching to Anthony Rizzo there? Who's more apt to hurt you, Anthony Rizzo or Wilson Contreras?
It's fair.
I mean, I would have even considered, had I been Dusty, the game's right there. I would have considered walking Rizzo and going and getting Doolittle, Sean Doolittle, or the right-handed guy, to come in and pitch, bring in a power right-hand arm to pitch to Contreras. The game's right there. You can't manage for the 14th inning in the
They would have left Contreras in that situation?
Oh, yeah, okay, for sure. So you would have gotten the righty-righty. Instead, he gambled lefty-lefty, and Rizzo hits lefties. Yeah. Rizzo hits.
Astros advanced last night. Dodgers advanced last night. Cubs need to get the Nationals in four prior to Strasburg in five.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Yankees-Indians going to a game five going to be interesting. So that's
the Yankees
that's where we are
really fun.
Young team.
They're young. They hit. They're not remotely intimidated. Severino was good last night.
Going to be a tough game to win game five, though.
They hit Kluber last time.
They did. Gave the game away. So. Got about 10 minutes before we talk to Chris Lee of VandySports.com about the Doors, who are headed to Oxford this week for 2:30 kickoff against the Rebels. Neil, what happened? I know you got content coming. What's the main idea? What was basketball like yesterday?
There's a lot of preseason optimism. It's a deep team. It's a deep backcourt. People are competing for minutes. Practice is more competitive than it usually is because there's more bodies. There's more people fighting for time. Andy talked about playing small some. They're going to be able to go four guards with a big at times. I don't think they're just handing minutes out. I mean, Brian Tyree's going to play the point. Terrence Davis talked a lot about how he's emphasized defense, emphasized his jump shot. There's a feeling that he's going to be a better shooter this year. They got Markel Crawford's a much better on-ball defender than they've had. And then the best on-ball defender on the team is Devontae Shuler, who maybe one of the best on-ball defenders in the country. They've got a chance to be a really good team. We'll see. I mean, you know me. I'm not one to go crazy with preseason optimism because preseason optimism is
it's one knee away.
Yeah, and it's an epidemic around the country. Everybody feels good. But the one thing Andy says that I think is interesting is the last 2 years Ole Miss has gone 10-8 in the league and didn't get in. He thinks 10-8 in the league this year not only gets you in, but gets you solidly in the field. He thinks the league is that good, provided that Ole Miss takes care of its business in the non-league. And they're going to have some opportunities. Virginia Tech, Utah,
Texas,
potentially UNLV. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be some opportunities to get
I'm assuming middle again.
I think so. Yeah. Some chances to get some high-profile wins.
Yeah. I was disappointed with myself because I was doing three other things at the time, and I didn't put enough mental energy in it. I really wanted to start a caption contest. Ole Miss Basketball sends out the story about Andy yesterday and see the picture they used.
I did not.
It was Andy apparently answering a question from you.
Okay.
But it just shows the back of your head. So I've got like the back of your bald head and the front of Andy's bald head are the only two things I have in the picture. And there was such like a Rogaine or something from a caption contest in there, and I couldn't quite get it. And I was real upset with myself for about 20 seconds before I moved on to something else. It was good, though.
Yeah.
I was excited.
I'm glad you enjoyed that.
I still do it today. I mean, it's not time sensitive whatsoever.
You could.
You've come to terms, I mean.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Here you go. Look. Good pot, I know, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a pretty picture.
It's a lot of bald in that picture.
It is.
Because he's like looks like he's preaching. Looks like he's kind of – he talks with his hands a lot.
Yeah, he does. A lot of bald, a lot of something.
Intelligence, right?
Yeah.
Intelligence.
Andy is a very bright guy.
Half the conversation was good. All right. So
I don't know that I'm as intelligent as Andy.
Injury report-wise for football, kind of the same. Rawlings got through okay. Gary Wunderlich still questionable. I mean, that hamstring is going to keep tightening up because they just don't have time to give him enough time off. So he's a game-time decision. I didn't hear a lot else negative. For the most part, they're pretty healthy right now. They've been fairly lucky through five games.
Yeah, for sure. They don't have a significant injury. They've been able to kind of gut through it at center. Jordan Sims did better the other day. That let them take some of the load off Sean Rawlings. The one significant injury is Ty Quick got hurt late in that game. He's out for a few weeks with a meniscus injury, but. Otherwise, they're pretty healthy. They've been able to Dawson Knox, A.J. Brown have been able to play through stuff and kind of get healthy while playing, which is good fortune.
Matt said that nothing really was changed at halftime, that they kept the same schematic things in play, and just said a lot of times they cut down on missed assignments. I think it was McGriff that said there were 8 MAs in the first half that led to big plays, only 2 after halftime. So if nothing else, they were happier with the mental work of their team in the second half as executed. And again, what you call from that's kind of your decision. But anyway,
we're gonna find out.
Yeah, we'll see. Starting in a few days.
You know, I'm not saying it's spin or propaganda. It just, you know, the game was 38-3 when Ole Miss appeared to start playing better. How much of that was because Auburn took its foot off the gas? Took its top cars out of the race? How much of that was because Ole Miss figured something out? We're going to find out.
What do you think of these Florida uniforms?
I don't care for them.
But you're not the target demographic.
Exactly.
Kids, recruits, that's it. Players, recruits. They're not wearing them every game, guys. I see all the negative stuff. No, it's not the new uniform. They're still going to put the royal blue on a lot. They're still going to wear them.
Why do fans struggle with this? Why? What is so hard to understand about this is attractive to a target demographic?
I mean, they're insanely ugly.
That's not the argument.
It's not really
the
point.
Kids love them.
They're different. They're neat.
Kids love them.
Yeah.
I hate to break this to fans. This is to all fans. Kids only use the word tradition at the urging of the coaching staff that's recruiting them. Kids don't care about tradition. They don't care. Almost, to coin a phrase from Jeffrey Vitter, it's almost unanimous. Yep. They don't. Young people, that's not what their thing is. And I'm not criticizing either. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that's a thing. I don't think kids care about uniform traditions.
Why doesn't Alabama take the plunge?
Because their fan base cares so freaking much.
Is that really what it is?
About tradition.
The only thing they've done is they had that year where they put the houndstooth on the neck. You know, remember it kind of was around the collar of the jersey?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it, though. I think they've done that once or twice.
Is it once that I know of? Because it was for a game against Ole Miss that I covered.
Yeah. Well, that's why I remember it.
Oh,
that was just one game. It wasn't the season.
No. God, no.
That was their version of an alternate uniform, was putting a little houndstooth on a collar.
Yeah. It's just not what they do. It's just not what they do.
It's strange to me. People would buy the other looks. They'd sell stuff. They'd monetize it. A ton. But they don't. They stay, whatever. Penn State, for the most part, stays traditional. Michigan's done a little funky stuff at times, but not a lot.
Yeah, Michigan's played around some. They
played
around.
Ohio State's played around some.
Michigan did the colorway thing at the beginning of the year with the all yellow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think kids like it when you shake it up.
Florida's also a test dummy for Nike. One of the test dummies.
Mm-hmm.
So they get a lot. You know, they were one of the first ones that a couple years ago had the different color sleeve than the rest of the jersey. I think Virginia Tech might have been in there too. So yeah, they're a little bit of a test dummy there, because I mean Nike's starting to run out of ideas for even Oregon. Oregon's had some terrible uniforms in the last few games. But anyway, all right, we'll go to Chris Lee in a second to talk Vanderbilt. Before we do that, today's part of the podcast brought to you by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com, the makers of Sildenafil. Head on over to the website at TysonDrugs.com, where you can fill out the form and have it delivered to you. Even if you are not local, you can also give them a call at 662-252-2321. Give them your doctor's name. They'll get the prescription ready so you can get the $10 alternative to that $50 or $60 little blue pill, same length of effectiveness, and has you ready in as little as 15 minutes. So TysonDrugs.com, 662-252-2321.
The podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site. It's harryalexander.com. I'm going to give you some new information about Harry and Harry Alexander starting tomorrow on the podcast. You really want to know a lot of talk about whether the market's down, whether it's a bad time or a good time to be in the market. Give you some details on that starting tomorrow on the podcast. You want to listen to that, ha@harryalexander.com. If you're in the market to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael Oswalt a call. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in the state. Look him up on his site, gotland.com. You can read all of his testimonials, that kind of thing. Here's the deal. If you're a buyer, Michael Oswalt has the biggest land inventory in Mississippi. If you're thinking about selling, if you're on the fence, if it's in your future, he'll come to your home. He'll tell you what he does. He'll market your property, and he'll get it sold for you. Tom Smith Land and Homes is in the midst of its fourth record-breaking year because the market's hot. If you're on the fence, you're ready to sell, call Michael. He'll get it done for you, whatever it takes, drone videos, whatever. He's going to put his money where his mouth is and get your property sold. 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs right now at 1.75% annual percentage yield. Three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With a three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out LiveOxford, BankOxford.com, or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan. Great lease deals. It's tremendous service. The people there are fantastic. I've purchased from them several times. You should give it a shot, too, if you are in the market for a Nissan vehicle. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
Now, Chris Lee on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Chris, as always, thanks for giving us a few minutes this morning. Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, Saturday afternoon, 2:30 from Bald-Hemingway Stadium, and something has to give. Vanderbilt is giving up tons of rushing yards, and Ole Miss cannot run the football at all. They're worst in the country, so at some point, one of those teams will be successful at something they haven't been successful with all season.
Yeah, and let's be real, too. Both teams have played some pretty brutal schedules in some way. Ole Miss has taken on Auburn and Alabama, which I think there are three really good teams in the SEC, and those are two of them. Vanderbilt's played Alabama and Georgia, which I think are the best two teams in the league. And on the Vanderbilt end of things, it's really been a tale of two completely different seasons. The first 3 weeks of the year, they led the nation in total defense and scoring defense. They were giving up like 4 points a game and I think under 200 yards. But then they played teams with athletes and teams with real power running games. And Derek Mason's defenses were built on stopping the spread. These were teams that do something completely different. They have athletes like they won't face the rest of the year. I'm not going to say throw out what you saw for Vandy the last 3 weeks because I think it shows you just how vulnerable that defense is against great teams. But I think that they won't see teams the likes of the ones that killed them two of the last 3 weeks on their schedule anymore. And I think that's one thing Derek Mason has got to be happy about.
Yeah, I haven't gotten much right with picks the last few weeks. I've had some real – I'm even losing the Neil these days. But
whoa.
I'm just saying.
I'm five games over 500.
You are, yes. Blind squirrels, nuts, that kind of thing. My point being, though –
man, I watch football like a-
we overvalued, I think, Vanderbilt so much early on just because they were winning impressively. I mean, I even thought Middle was going to be okay going in. They get that win. The Kansas State game, though, is the one where I sat there and watched it and said, they look really good. Defensively, they're really good. But as you said, they haven't faced athletes yet. It was an offensive scheme for Bill Snyder's group that would not have been sophisticated even at the high school level. And I said, what's going to happen when there are people on the field as or faster than they are? And then I feel like that's kind of happened the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, it has. And again, it's not a defense that's really built to stop power running games. Their ends are smallish. And what they did the first few weeks, Chase, is they really got a lot of pressure on quarterbacks. They would bring Charles Wright, who's a linebacker, up to the edge. Dario Diengbo, who plays end, against teams that weren't as big and physical, could get to the passer. But when you've got Alabama and Georgia that have got 4- and 5-star offensive linemen, they can shut that off. And I've kind of likened it to a game of paper, scissors, rock. When you flash rock and I flash scissors, you're going to smash me every time. And there's really not a lot I can do about it. I go back and look at those first few games, and Kansas State did not have those type of athletes, but it did have a really good offense. And Middle Tennessee's offense is pretty good, too. I mean, it's been a different season for them since they lost their quarterback, who's going to end up in the top 10 of passing yards nationwide. But it's a different kind of good offense. And again, it wasn't anywhere near those teams were in terms of athletes. Chase, I could have helped you out on last week. I would have told you that Georgia was pretty much going to smash Vanderbilt because I'd seen what Alabama did.
Yeah, I haven't missed Georgia a Vanderbilt game thing. Yet, Chris, just so you know. I haven't missed one. Big boy over here talks all sorts of trash, and I haven't missed a Vandy game yet. Now, I'm worried about this one, but go ahead.
Well, I missed the Alabama game because I put too much stock in what Alabama had done against Colorado State. I thought they had the goods to keep that one close. Obviously, that was silly now. And I missed the Kansas State game. I just thought Kansas State was further along as a program and would be a worse matchup. But I think, you know, the last couple of weeks were sort of predictable. Florida wasn't as predictable because I just don't think Florida's offense is that good. And I thought they had a chance to stop them. But that was just a real stinker of a game.
So Vanderbilt made a mistake with Alabama. Vanderbilt allowed its fans to chant, "We want Bama." The game was over that moment.
Yes. Yes.
Don't ever poke that monster.
No, that's probably one that you'd like a do-over on if you're Vanderbilt.
Yeah, those were not,
although
those were not the smart
Vanderbilt kids. They were going to get flattened anyway, but I don't think that helped.
So Zach Cunningham's not on the field for Vanderbilt this season. But last year in Nashville, Derek Mason did a number on Shea Patterson, really confused him. It was the week after Patterson, he looked so good against Texas A&M, even though it was a lot of bailing out of the pocket. Patterson's still doing that a little bit. He is farther along in his development, obviously. But do you see a similar plan? What do you kind of expect from Mason's defense against Patterson this week?
Well, I was stunned at how they shut him down last year. I didn't see that coming in a million years. It never occurred to me going into the week of the game that they were about to win that game. In fact, I remember Neil can tell you, he and I had some conversations about Derek Mason maybe being at Ole Miss, and I thought that was going to be the beginning of the end. I'm sure Neil remembers those talks we had.
Yes.
But they shocked me, and one thing about them – look, if you look at the last 3 weeks, they've been destroyed, and I get it. But there are some pockets of skill on this team. They've got a really good corner named Juwan Williams, who I think is going to play in the league one day. He's 6'3", he's physical. He was a top 100 recruit nationally until he didn't play his senior year, and then he plummeted in the rankings. I think he was number 60 by Rivals, but he was ruled ineligible after he transferred. He's a true sophomore, and for the most part, he's been really good. Trey Herndon, who's their number two corner, who I think is a fifth-year senior, did not play the Florida game. They picked on the people they had in his spot. He's back, and I think they're much better at that other corner spot with him. Their safeties are pretty good. So I know Ole Miss has some athletes, and look, Ole Miss has got enough talent to where Vanderbilt's confidence, I don't know, for all I know, it could have collapsed the last few weeks, but it seems like in terms of offenses, it's a better matchup because they do have a lot of guys in their secondary that have proven that they could make plays at various points of the season. And I think the interesting thing is going to be where they can get after Shea Patterson. And they were able to do that early in the season and do it quite a bit. It was just the offensive lines the last 3 weeks, they were up against better athletes. There was just not much they could do.
Just looking at stat sheets, I mean, I've watched a little bit of Vanderbilt, but most of the games I've watched have been blowouts at some point the last few weeks. They don't appear to be running the ball as effectively as I would have maybe expected.
No, and that's one thing that surprised them. they thought that they were going to be able to be a power running team. I mean, Ralph Webb has played on some really bad teams in his career, and you figured if he could run the ball then, he'd run the ball now. But you look at it, there's sort of explanations for it in the big picture. I think they've got a starter that's different from the same guy at the same spot from last year at every spot on the offensive line. Now, they have some of the same guys. They've just moved around, and they had some guard injuries in camp. Their two supposed starting guards both got hurt and missed a lot of August. They had to plug in other guys. I don't think they ever found continuity. They've switched starters at those positions. They played multiple guys at those positions during the game, and they're blocking. They've got a really good center in Bruno Reagan, who was a guard last year, but their guard play in terms of run blocking has been abysmal. And people have looked at Ralph Webb's numbers, and I'm sure you look for him afar and you say, what's happened to Ralph? Well, here's what's happened. Ralph is a guy that thrives on two things. He waits that extra split second for his blocks to develop, and he drags tacklers 5, 6, 7 yards downfield. Well, there's two things working against him. This year, when he waits that extra split second for the hole to open, all that happens instead of a blocker getting a hat on a guy and moving his guy is you allow one extra guy to shoot the A-gap when there's already probably another guy there as is. And then downfield, when you can't get more than two or three steps of a head start, you have no momentum, so you can't drag tacklers. It's just been a nightmare combination for him because he's got guys in his face pretty quickly, and they just are not doing any kind of a job at all in terms of clearing guys between the tackles and giving him a chance.
While we're talking about Webb, can you, before it's over, can you please get a really nice, glossy, get it autographed, personalized for Chase? Because when this is over, when this Ralph Webb era at Vanderbilt ends, we need to have something to remember it by. Otherwise, it's going to be just a complete sadness.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do that. I'm trying to figure out the most professional way to do that within the confines of my job. So
yeah, it's hard. It is. Yeah. It is. It's difficult.
Might have to be at the end of the season. Might be when it's over. I guess I could just go into the visitor locker room this week and ask for it, but that probably would not be the most professional thing on my part. So,
I mean, yeah. We could take a handful of glossies down to the field in pregame and say, hey, Ralph.
Yeah.
Ralph.
Hey, Derek, just 1 minute. I'll be quick.
Yeah, Derek, can we borrow Ralph for just a minute here?
If you guys do that, what I really want to see is the Chase selfie with Ralph. That would make my day.
It would make my day.
You think if I just handed a bunch to Larry, he'd just go get them for me and bring them back?
It's possible.
I bet he would.
He would go, yes.
Yes.
Yes. We were told you about that, Larry Leathers.
Yeah, I'm still working on the Zobrist signed baseball for you, Neil. I'll see if I can pull that off.
Yeah, yeah. I was pretty happy with Ben in the seventh inning yesterday.
I do have this question. Neil and I were discussing this earlier in the week. Larry being one of the more trying to be silent but vocal cheerers in press boxes. does he do that in Nashville as well, or is that just something he takes on the road?
I'll give you a good story, and Larry's been pretty good to me, but. When they played Arkansas, this would have been one of Cutler's games his senior year. Larry spent the second half of the season on crutches after a celebratory moment when Cutler threw a touchdown pass in the last couple of minutes.
Really?
Yeah. There was a definite knee injury and crutches involved in that one. So.
Wow. Jumping up and down in the press box?
No, I don't think – I think it was on the field. He usually goes to the field a lot of times the last couple of minutes. And they have – they've changed their structure a little bit this year. He's got a little bit more help. Their media relations department is kind of woefully undermanned, which that's a whole other story. But they've got a new head SID. The old one really didn't do much of anything. And Kyle Parkinson, who was their baseball SID, does a lot of the stuff now. So he's freed Larry up to help with some other stuff. But, yeah, Larry did sustain a knee injury in Fayetteville a few years back.
We'll take a break from our interview with Chris Lee to tell you that the podcast is brought to you by Vitamend, 3010 Old Taylor Road in front of the Faulkner Flats Apartments next door to Lapel's Dry Cleaning in Oxford. Still the same IVs and shots as before, but they've added the cryosauna, which is great for removing inflammation and toxins. It speeds up recovery from a workout, burns calories, speeds up your metabolism, gets as cold as -220. The entire process is just 2 minutes. They also have the infrared sauna, which removes toxins. It's not like a typical dry sauna. This one gets only to 130, 140, so you can stay in a little longer. They have combo packages. They still have the overserve treatment. They have a smoothie bar, all natural foods, no added sugar. It's locally sourced. It's the same number as always, 662-638-3600. They're open Tuesday through Sunday. IVs and shots are Friday through Sunday for now. Call ahead or send them an email, info@vitamin.com. Podcast also sponsored by Romero Miller. He is a State Farm agent based in Olive Branch. Former Ole Miss quarterback, longtime contributor to RebelGrove.com, and he can write insurance throughout the states of Mississippi and Tennessee. Contact Romero at RomeroMiller.com, on Facebook at Romero Miller State Farm, or by email at Romero@RomeroMiller.com. Romero Miller State Farm is located at 7164 Hacks Cross Road, Suite 119 in Olive Branch. The phone number is 662-893-1212. Podcast is also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys, more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Rebel Grove listeners. It's a $500 savings. Call him today. And now back to our interview with Chris Lee on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
Yeah, Kyle's always been pretty helpful. I like him. They also have the worst food in the SEC in the press box, typically. Vanderbilt,
oh,
not
hands,
typically
hands
one
down.
Of the,
their, yeah. Their baseball food is better than their football food, and that's probably the only place in the country where you can say that.
Yeah, we brag on the baseball food because it was like fajita bar or something last time
awesome.
We were there. Yeah,
and they had the Major League Baseball package on the DirecTV. It was like, this is incredible. And then you go to football and it's like, this is not incredible.
They have the ice cream or the gelato or something though, right? Isn't that at Vanderbilt?
No, they don't have that anymore. And baseball, that is, Tim Corbin is kind of his own little island, which is the best thing they could possibly do. Because their AD is so poorly run. I mean, we could spend a two-hour podcast just on that. But Tim has kind of got his own little island in terms of baseball, and he gets it. He gets perception and those things. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that they've got nicer stuff. And
he's got a very nice island. It's a nice island. It really is. It's a good place. It's a good place to spend a weekend.
Yeah, I don't see where Tim gets told no a whole lot, in my opinion, right?
No, they'd be stupid. And Tim could run for mayor in Nashville and probably win. I mean, when I've seen Tennessee fans that will pull for them in baseball just because he's out in the community. He doesn't ever turn down an opportunity to speak to civic groups or to, you know, he'll show up at a little league game and stuff like that. And yeah, I think when you win a national title and you come really close on another one, and look, there was once upon a time, their baseball program was worse than their football program at its worst. You could make that argument. So I think that's one of the few really smart things they have done is they've just said, hey, it's yours and go run it as you please.
Back to football for a minute. We've talked and we're going to I don't know why we're in the midst of a season that's not going to end in a bowl game, no matter what. We're in the midst of a season that's going to end in a coaching change almost 100% positively. That being said, fans still get hung up on to get where we want to go, we have to win this game. It's a must win. I would think the flip of that is true at Vanderbilt, right? I mean, if they're going to right the ship and make some sort of a run towards a bowl game, winning on Saturday is an absolute necessity, right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, look, Neil, when I took over the site in 2003, they'd not been to a bowl game since 1982 or even had a winning season, because there were times in there where you could go 6-5 and there weren't as many bowls and you couldn't go. Well, they didn't even qualify for them then. And even in some of their bowl games, they ended up losing those and finishing 6-7. The schedule this year has been pretty demanding. I think they're going to have a top 15 strength of schedule when it's done. Look, if you finish one game above 500 at Vanderbilt, that's an accomplishment. If you do it against the schedule they've got, that's a huge accomplishment. Yeah, I mean, most schools, 7-6 would mean fire the coach or fans are unhappy. At Vanderbilt, it's a big deal, and it should be a big deal as far as they've allowed themselves to get behind in terms of the arms race with the stadium and some other things like that. I mean, if Derek gets them to 7-6, it'll have been a really, really good season for them. And he would deserve whatever accolades come with that, because it's not been an easy job.
I don't even really know where to go football-wise because of these two teams at the moment. I am curious, though. It's getting close. Media days next week. What's up with Vanderbilt basketball?
That is a really interesting story, because they've got a shot to sign three of the top 15 players nationally, which they've never signed even one guy at that level. And I think they're probably going to get two of them. One of them is Darius Garland, who I think is number 12 nationally. He plays at Brentwood Academy. His best two friends are Vanderbilt football commitments right now. And so I think it's even been said that he's kind of a silent commit, and I think there might be something to that. But they just had a kid in from Vermont named Semi Chatou, who is an NBA 4. He's 6'10". He's got a handle. He does everything. A lot of people think that he is leaning towards Vanderbilt. He's going to go to North Carolina. The Vanderbilt system offensively is probably a better fit for him. And North Carolina's track record for developing players to the NBA recently isn't what you might think it is until you really look at it. Now, I'm not saying that Carolina's going to go through some drought where they don't send players to the NBA, but it's not what you think of when you think of North Carolina. I think they've got a chance to land two top 15 recruits and maybe a third in Romeo Langford, who some of the schools that he's looking at are tied up in that shoe mess, and you just never know where that's going to go. But they have got what I think is a phenomenal coach. I think he did a tremendous job last year. And he is really on the verge of bringing in the kind of talent that they've never had before. And if they keep him, he's got a chance to do some really good things at Vanderbilt, I think.
Yeah. Bryce has always been considered a great recruiter. I mean, and I know it takes some fortunate breaks and some geographic luck and some of those things, but he's got a chance to really build on what Kevin Stallings kind of started there.
He does, and the big difference between the two of them is Kevin was a good basketball coach. Man, he was a jerk. He got in his way so many times, and there are kids that just wouldn't look at him at Vanderbilt because of Kevin, or would look and then would kind of turn away. Bryce is one of probably the nicest and most down-to-earth human beings that I've ever met. I think anybody that you ask would say the same thing. And that really works in recruiting, believe it or not. People like people that they like. And I just think the combination of his personality, I think he's a really good coach. There's been talk of the NBA coming after him within a couple of years. I wouldn't doubt it at all. Nashville's a place where a lot of people want to be. The SEC, I think, is on the rise in basketball recruiting. You guys talk about Ole Miss and how kind of the recruiting with Laramie Tunsil and those guys was sort of the perfect storm a few years back. It's kind of the same thing that I'm seeing in Nashville, starting with one guy in their backyard who's got two of his two best friends who are coming to school. Then you get one of those and other guys want to come. It really is. The next month is going to be really interesting to see if they can land those two kids, because I think it has the potential to change the face of that program.
Your thoughts on Saturday? What are the keys? What do you expect? Who wins? That kind of thing.
Turnovers is the first thing that you've got to look at, and they've been really good. They have not they've turned the ball over three times all year, which I think ties in for third in the country. And one of the teams in front of them has played fewer games. Kyle Shermer has been really good with the ball. He's got 13 touchdowns. He's got one pick. So I think he's the kind of guy that that can pick apart a defense if he gets some times and if his receivers play well, which is kind of a hit and miss proposition sometimes. They've been great some weeks and they've been very mediocre or below that other weeks. I think that getting a pass rush is a big deal. And I think if they can find Ralph Webb some room to run, again, it'd be an easier matchup for the run, but they haven't run against anybody. But I think if they win the turnover battle, and I think if they can get Kyle Shurmur some good throwing lanes, which they've done a pretty good job of, and make some catches, they've got a shot.
Yeah, I think they've got more than a shot. I have no idea. Like, Vanderbilt hasn't run, but Ole Miss hasn't stopped the run. Ole Miss can't run. Ole Miss is building a lot of optimism over the last quarter and a half of a game that they trailed 38-3. I don't know.
Yeah, and on the Vandy end, I think with Derek, one of the things that he's been really good at doing is sort of recovering from disaster. I didn't think he'd ever get out of his first year and build anything, but they got a little better his second year, his third year, when I think it started to fall apart him on midseason. I don't think anybody knew they were about to beat Ole Miss and beat Tennessee and do it pretty handily. He's kind of got the blueprint for recovering from disaster. And let's face it, they've lost their last three games by 108 points. So that pretty much qualifies as disaster. I think that's one thing that I'm kind of hanging my hat on. If they're to go to Oxford and win, is his ability to get his team motivated and to shake off the dust of what happened the last couple of weeks. And I think that's one of his better attributes. And in as many games as they've lost, he certainly had some practice at it.
I know you're there in Nashville. There's a lot of UT people around. What's the feeling around there about Butch Jones?
That's a dumpster fire. And I didn't understand a lot of the optimism coming into the season. Neil, if you looked at it, I think they lost their best player at every single position group. From a team that lost four games a year ago, they're breaking in a new quarterback. People are saying, well, Josh Dobbs couldn't throw. I'm like, yeah, but he'd run for a buck 50 on you. And in the SEC, that makes a difference. On third and eight, they were just – I would have almost rather had them in third and two than third and eight, given what you knew was probably coming with Josh Dobbs escaping the pocket and running. But the other thing is, if you go back and look a couple years ago, they had that big lawsuit that they settled for $2.5 million. But if you looked at the documents, that was a program that behind the scenes – he didn't appear to have a lot of control over. This year, it seemed like every week there was something coming out with the player fighting or he's coming up with something stupid in the press conference. And it just is a sideshow every week. You look at the programs that are really well run, you know, Nick Saban and guys like that that are just masters at it. And the one thing that they do really well is they always control the narrative. They always have their team under control. Yeah, you might have some incidents, but it's not a dumpster fire. I think that Butch Jones is a really good coach at a Central Michigan or a Cincinnati, but I think there's a lot of people that just crack under the pressure that comes with a big-time SEC job. I think that's exactly what's going on. You look at his press conferences every week, and there's always some Twitter headline that is going viral. I just think he is a guy that is cracked under pressure. I don't see him getting the genie back in the bottle.
Well, Chris, appreciate the time very much. We'll talk to you again soon, and let me know later this week what you need from postgame, and I'll get it to you.
You bet. Sorry I can't be there. Always look forward to going to Oxford and seeing you guys, but we'll do some content swap later in the week, and I look forward to that.
Us too. Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks.
Thanks to Chris for joining us today. The podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting and understands your market. Also, leaner in condo financing in Oxford. So ask Jason about the float down option. Told you about it for a while. It's where you can lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704. Or JLowe, JLOWE, at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric, 662-934-3846, or Shane, 662-832-8749.
Also, the podcast is brought to you by Mastercuts Lawn and Landscape. Mastercuts in Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. Also, all of North Mississippi with skeeter beaters to get rid of those pesky mosquitoes. No job too large or small for Mastercuts. Services include landscape design and installation, irrigation, maintenance, and turf. They have new holiday lighting as we inch closer to the holiday season. Get a free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. And when you sign an annual contract and mention the podcast, first cut is free. Let's see what we got going on. Appreciate Chris for giving us a glimpse into Vanderbilt. I was not aware of the basketball recruiting thing they had going on, but not overly surprised.
Yeah, they're recruiting at
there.
A really high level.
Who's going to be bad this season? It seems like everybody we talked about in the SEC is better.
Well, it's one of the reasons that people think 10-8 will get you in soundly.
But I mean, who's bad?
Auburn potentially now.
Okay. State won't be that much better.
No. Not much bad. Alabama should be notably better. I don't know how much better LSU will be this year. Give them another year, that would be really good. It's a really good league.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's cyclical. Now, we've heard this before, and it didn't pan out. But, you know, there's some really good teams. Hey, I should also tell you that basketball, speaking of basketball, registration for youth basketball in the Oxford Park Commission is it's open right now. You can sign your son or daughter up in all the different leagues that are open for children ages 5 to 15. The cost is just $50 per child. Games will be played in the Activity Center on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturday mornings. For more information on registration or other classes and programs offered by the OPC, visit www.oxfordparkcommission.com.
Not going to jump off into the political thing here for the most part, but I see we're having another nationwide misunderstanding of the First Amendment. It's happened pretty often. We're doing that again now where
people in our profession do not field, whatever you want to call it, do not understand the First Amendment.
Jemele Hill suspended by ESPN for 2 weeks yesterday after the second offense of what they termed inappropriate conduct on social media. She had, as we mentioned on the show yesterday, it's mostly while we're following up, she had implied strongly for people to boycott advertisers of the Cowboys. Some of those advertisers are shared by ESPN and actually even her show, the Sports Center at 6 o'clock Eastern Time. So 2 weeks, last night Michael Smith was not on the show either, a mutual decision by management with ESPN and Smith, per James Miller on Twitter. She was not prosecuted. A private company can do whatever it wants with its employees, and I'm sure that in her contract it has this laid out in it.
Well, they just talked about it with her. I'm not saying Jemele Hill shouldn't be frustrated. She has every right, if she chooses to be frustrated, to feel frustrated about whatever social issues there are. But she just went through this with her social media.
The Trump stuff a couple weeks ago.
And so she spent part of yesterday. Let's get, because people push back on this. So let's talk about it for a minute. It's not a great time at ESPN.
Losing a lot of subs.
People are cutting the cord. People are streaming. Young people don't watch television.
People are realizing that some of the rights packages were way overvalued.
Yes. So, you're ESPN. Now, you have to cover the NFL, but you're a partner with the NFL. And when I say the NFL props up ESPN, people I get this debate. I got this yesterday from people, and I'm not I know my voice indicates derision. I don't mean for it to. It's a not understanding. People go, college football is more popular than NFL. Okay, analytically, it's not. But let's just say for the sake of it that it is. The problem with college football is there's a limited offseason. The offseason in college football, from a coverage standpoint, is forced. The season ends January the 10th-ish with the championship game.
Yep.
You launch right into recruiting, which goes to the first Wednesday in February. So there's
which hasn't really gained traction on a national television level.
With the exception of National Signing Day.
Right, yeah, one day.
So you get one day in early February. And then college football sort of goes bye-bye. From a coverage standpoint.
Really until media day. As dumb as Media Day is, that's when it sort of pops back into the conversation.
You get a little bit at spring. You can do some stuff. And then you have Media Day, and then it gets going again. The NFL, in other words, there are no trades. There's no free agency period. There's the build-up to the NFL draft, for whatever reason, well, because you know the people. The build-up to the NFL draft, you can, from a coverage standpoint, do that for 2 months. You can't do that in recruiting nationally for 2 months. It won't work. If it would work, they would have done it. So if you're ESPN and you have the NFL, here's the NFL platform. They start to training camp in late July. The season itself goes through New Year's. With regular season games, then you get the playoffs, rounds of playoffs.
Into February.
Into early February when you get a Super Bowl. Then you are able to literally launch immediately into draft stuff. The Senior Bowl's in January. That's the kickoff to the draft. They have combine stuff. Free agency gets going. The draft happens. The NFL offseason really is like May and June. That's it. The NFL's 10 months a year of content at ESPN. And in May, ESPN launches into NBA for a month. You get all the NBA playoff drama, which gets good ratings. NBA regular season doesn't get crazy ratings. NBA playoffs can carry a network for a month. Am I being fair?
Yeah, that's fine.
So all they really have to do is carry themselves through June. And in June, in the NBA, you still have the NBA finals till the midpoint of June. ESPN leans on the NFL for 10 months a year. So Jemele Hill says, hey, boycott AT&T. What the hell do you think the reaction's going to be, Jemele? What the hell do you think's going to happen? AT&T goes, hey, ring, ring. Yeah, listen. Hello? You want us to withdraw all of our money from ESPN? You want us to – how about we boycott ESPN?
I got Fox online, too. He'll listen.
Dude, I promise you, Fox will take our money. What the hell did you think?
Not to mention AT&T, a huge provider for ESPN3.
Yeah, just
streaming-wise, AT&T, pretty big carrier. She wasn't prosecuted.
And let's go this with Jerry Jones for a minute. I did this yesterday, and it's worth doing again.
If I say something really stupid today, I'm not going to get put in jail, but I might get a call from someone.
Yeah, it would be like you saying something stupid about Crystal or Exxon. After I got through strangling you, I mean, you're not going to go to jail. I might go to jail. But Ben Craddock probably isn't going to be happy.
Yeah. We would never do that because they're awesome. But
right. But it's just – it's – if you're Jerry Jones and you're running the Dallas Cowboys, Look, this flag thing's gone crazy. I get it. Yesterday there was a picture of I think it was Reddick, the Josh Reddick, the Astros outfielder,
yeah,
celebrating the Astros win over the Red Sox, and he's wearing his American flag underwear.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to strictly interpret the flag code,
that's inappropriate.
That's inappropriate. There's so much inappropriate on the use of the American flag that we could do hours of podcasts on that topic. But if you're Jerry Jones, I suspect most of our audience is already in agreement with me. I'm preaching to the choir here. But I'm the one person, you'll admit this, the whole flag thing, I've not had a passionate opinion about it yet. Whatever.
Do you expect a cowboy to call Jerry's bluff?
No.
You don't?
I don't. Because now Jerry Jones has basically said, I have to bench you if you do it.
He reiterated this morning. He's on a radio show somewhere this morning. Where can I find it? Hold on. It was right here. Jerry Jones on 105.3, The Fan. I have no idea where that's out of. Ask if Dak or Zeke sat out during anthem, and his quote again was, if you don't stand and honor the flag, then you will not play.
Fair enough. He's the employer. This is First Amendment. Let's say Ezekiel Elliott takes a knee during the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Ezekiel Elliott is not going to be arrested by the Dallas Metropolitan Police that are at the stadium that day. Not going to happen. Ezekiel Elliott is not going to be stripped of any of his freedoms. Ezekiel Elliott is not going to be prosecuted. He has a First Amendment right to protest peacefully. He has a First Amendment right to take a knee. Now, his employer has a right to say, well, in response to that, because we don't want to be associated as an organization with your protest, we're suspending you from today's game. You're not going to play.
A couple of years ago, whenever it was, Paula Deen had the First Amendment right to say something really stupid.
She did.
The Food Network had their right to fire her.
Yes. She did not go to jail, nor should she have gone to jail. But the Food Network had the right to say, we don't want to be associated with those viewpoints.
To me, this is very simple. There's not much complicated in this whatsoever.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people in journalism do not understand money and don't care about money. Money doesn't matter to them. And they are up in arms. Yes, let's boycott. Jemele Hill can boycott AT&T all she wants. She could pick up the phone yesterday and say, I'm no longer with AT&T. I'm switching to Sprint.
Why do you think the head of Disney reversed course yesterday?
You have to update me on what happened. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean with Hill, because you know he was the defender after the first time with Trump.
Because it was impacting their bottom line.
It became money all of a sudden. That's it. Nobody cared. The first time it had no impact to anything. It was just people yelling at each other across the
road. Why do you think Mike Pence went and did what he did? Why do you think Donald Trump is tweeting about Jemele Hill today?
$242,000 for that Pence stunt.
Why'd he do it? Because it invigorates their base.
Wow.
If it helps them win a re-election, $242,000 was a drop in a bucket in their eyes. So it's that deal. It's where I get people say, well, I get people with me, what do you think about the flag thing? I'm like, I don't think anything of it. Because I'm a believer that if you want to peacefully protest, you can peacefully protest. That's one of the things that men and women went overseas to fight for, is for your right to peacefully protest. But your peaceful protestations can have consequences professionally. Yeah. And you have to be willing to accept that when you protest.
You think our coworker sits out the entire 2 weeks as well?
They're really good friends. And if that's what he wants to do and ESPN allows him to do it, then that's his right.
Yeah, I'm not arguing.
I doubt it. I would hope that someone close to him says,
it's an interesting spot for ESPN because they've been getting killed by conservatives who believe they've gone left on the spectrum for a while now.
Yeah.
And suddenly they make this move yesterday where the left is going to kill them too after this.
Well, they're being accused.
They're in a weird spot all of a sudden.
They're accused of being a sellout now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, see, here's how this works, ladies and gentlemen. ESPN is in the business of making money, and right now they're in the business of losing money. They can't add yet another damn money drain. They already have a massive money drain that they can't control. You're going to create another one?
From a rating standpoint, they're also paying these two people a lot of money for something that hasn't built up to an adequate rating spot yet.
Yeah, and they're already paying a lot of money to the NFL, which ratings are down. And I don't know whether that's just because of the flag or what. It's just a lot of things. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you're ESPN, yeah, I get where ESPN was frustrated. They told her the first time, hey, can you just chill on social media? You're good at your job. Do your job. Can you just do your job? Just do your job. And in your personal life, if you want to go never spend a penny with AT&T, that's cool. But you can't tweet that out.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate Chris for
his time. She's lucky she wasn't
today.
Fired, if you're honestly.
Appreciate Chris for joining us today. Again, contentrebelgrove.com, practice coverage tonight. And we will be back tomorrow. Again, guests the rest of the week. Emma Kent from the Daily Journal tomorrow. Also, Jeffrey and Ryan Brown, at least, as the week moves on to Ole Miss and Vanderbilt Saturday at 2:30. Talk to you on Wednesday.